And we're here on this week's K&M Podcast. Ken Brown from WGR Radio, Michael Hare, DetroitLions.com, as we talk Lions football. Hello, Mike.
Hello there, Kenny Brown. How are you?
I'm pretty good. 2 weeks to Thursday for this draft. Now I'm getting the juices flowing. Now I'm getting excited. Now things are happening. It's dragging.
Kenny, you've been talking about this draft for 2 years.
We can talk about it, but when it gets to my thing is when you get to the final 2 weeks, stuff starts happening. And you know what, Mike? We've been doing this podcast a couple of years now, and I'm sick of talking to you. So I had to bring guests on today because you wore me out the last 6 weeks. So we have to get
You wore me out.
So we got to get new blood in here today just to help us out a little bit. Talk draft. We got my friend Scott Bischoff on the line. He's the staff writer for Football Guy. He's Sean Belizean's guy when they do the Woodward Report. They do a bunch of stuff together. I'm not stealing him from Sean. I'm just borrowing him for the day. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
All right. So, Sean, you're going back with him. Don't worry about it. I won't take you forever, but it's all right.
I got a lot of things to tell Sean.
That's right. And Scott
it's
is
good
one,
to be on with both you guys.
Oh,
cool.
Fantastic. And Scott is one of the main guys. He's scouting background. He knows this game. He knows the players. He's just not some guy talking. So listen up and listen to the words he says because things are happening. First of all, for both of you guys, Michael here, I know you having your mock draft. What number are you on now?
I've done three. I've got one more coming up before the draft.
Okay.
You're doing the Lord's work.
It
is a mess to write those. It really is.
Has it changed, Mike, in your three volumes?
No,
Kenny,
my first two were Micah Parsons, the linebacker from Penn State. And my third one was I switched to the wide receiver, Ja'Marr Chase. You know, barring some, I don't know what, it's probably going to be one of those two guys in my final mock, and I can flip a coin for both of them.
Well, the thing I wanted to talk to you both about is interesting. We're going to get to the Lions pick in a minute because it seems like the Lions, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brad Holmes' work is going to be – he's going to build this team through the draft. They talk about it all the time. Then they go out and sign a bunch of high-priced free agents. But it looks like by having every contract free agent but one is a one-year deal – that he's going to try to build this team from the bottom up, from the draft up, take what's good of what they had, and then move on. Do you both think that's where they're going?
Well,
go ahead, Scott.
Well, I mean, I'll defer to Mike because I think Mike's a little closer to the team than I am. But it just seems like there are so many holes to fill. And yeah, they filled some of those, and they've addressed some of those needs. So I think they're going to be more competitive, perhaps, than they were last year. That doesn't mean that, you know, they're playoff bound or any of that kind of stuff. It's just there. It's not, you know, 2021 looks okay. There are holes to fill in the long term, and it's just about, you know, maximizing where they are in the draft and what they have, and you know, kind of looking at the picks that they have going forward and how they can fill these holes. So yeah, I mean, I think that Brad Holmes is a big job, you know, ahead of him with all of the, you know, the holes they have pretty much along their roster. I don't know if Mike agrees, but that's kind of what I see.
Yeah, Scott, I agree with you. I think they can have a better team in 2021 than they had a year ago. In other words, a team that ascends during the season, but then it still have a worse record, but be in better shape for 2022 and beyond. And I think one of the things they've done is they didn't marry themselves to any contracts that can weigh them down. I think the only multi-year contract among those free agents, correct me if I'm wrong, is the running back from Green Bay they signed, and I think they had to give him 2 years to get him. I think that's a smart thing because he's still a young player, and how running backs age quickly in the National Football League. But the rest of them are guys who fill roles, and you know, it's sort of like a one-year make-it-prove-it type of deal for all of them. It's none of these guys who are 32, 33, 34 years old hanging on all beaten to death and hanging on for one last payday. So I think it's the way to go, and as you move along in building your roster in future years, you can start, you know, putting more money into free agency. But this is the right way to go. It's what I would do.
I think it is.
Yeah, and I think they're almost in some ways forced to do it. To do it this way with the COVID season and the salary cap coming down to a point where they had to facilitate some of these 1 year deals where this is just the way it worked. I think maybe one of the outliers is Michael Brockers, but he's still a very effective player. Coming in and filling a need for them, giving them, you know, much more competitive defensive linemen than they had and depth, and that's going to matter. You know, instantly their defensive line went from looking like it had holes they absolutely needed to use, you know, draft picks for, to suddenly, you know, okay, we can defer a little bit there. You know, I mean, I think we know pass rushers. You can always use pass rushers. You can always use those guys. So, I mean, that doesn't take them out of the mix for a defensive lineman. It's just, you know, having an interior guy like that there, and a guy who can set some culture and set things, you know, in a good direction, that helps them right now and going forward.
Right. I think that this league is going toward, overall, with the salary cap and the high-end guys getting paid much more, that your football team of 53 is basically going to be 15 core guys and everything else is interchangeable. You're going to have a 15 that you have to have. And, you know, that includes some specialists, but it's going to be, you know, your left tackle, your quarterback, a skill player, a D end, you know, things like that, a corner. But other than that, you're going to see guys moving all the time from this point on, because with the contracts being so big, you're not going to be able to keep everybody. You got to make what position can I get by on with a cheaper person or a rookie or, you know, a young player, and what are core guys I need. And I think the Lions, I don't think they have their 15 core guys yet. So that's what
they don't. But you're bringing up a really good point that people need to be paying attention to, and it has to do with first round picks and their fifth year option. Now, obviously, you know, if you're signing a guy to a fifth year option, that means there's been some level of success. But we have to remember that the Lions have pick 7 this year, then they have 2 first round picks next year, and 2 first round picks the year after. That's 5 guys that you have to sign to potential big money all in and around the same time. You know what I mean? So
right. This
is, that's the core, I think, of what you're talking about, is they need to hit on these first round picks and then find value, you know, in the middle to the later part of the draft. And Brad Holmes has been able to do some of that with some of the defensive backs that they found. And, you know, some of the receivers, they seem to have a bit of a mold at the receiver position. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I know Mike said that he gave Ja'Marr Chase to the Lions with his last mock, and I think, you know, Ja'Marr Chase is a great wide receiver, a great prospect coming into, you know, a college wide receiver. I mean, this is always a big leap to go to, you know, jump from college to the NFL. But Ja'Marr Chase had an incredible season 2 years ago, and, you know, I mean, if he ends up the pick, Lions fans should be very happy.
Well, let's go through this. You want to finish on that, Mike?
I'm just going to add one last thing. When we're talking about the 50-year options and all that, I think one of the marks of whether you've had good drafts is how many players you have on your roster who are on their second contract when they've been drafted by your team, whether it's the Lions or the Patriots or whoever. And there's a dearth of those players on the Detroit Lions roster, and there has been. And I think that going forward, you want those decisions, hard decisions, on whether to either number one, pick up the fifth-year option, or number two, and which is just as attractive in a way, but it might cost you a little bit more, is to re-sign them early, as early as the rules permit. So I think it's not quite as dire a picture as you might paint, because it really indicates that you're on the right track.
Well, I'm going to give you a perfect
example. The best-case scenario is if you've got difficult decisions to make about the 5 players that you took, that means you've crushed those picks. It's a great scenario.
Right, and I'm gonna
we hope that they have difficulty doing that.
Yeah, I'm going to give you an example of what you're talking about, is the Galladay deal. He got to a point, they had to make the decision, but that was a pick that progressed to the point where you could make the decision, should we keep him or let him go? And they decided to let him go, and they'll get the comp pick. But those are the guys, that's where you want to get to. You don't want to get to a point where, like Giovanni Tavai, where, you know, we want to let him go. You want to get to a point where we need to decide how much is it going to be worth to keep him, but he's a good player that we can use. So.
And we're winning games, and we need to continue winning games.
Right.
So we need him.
Right, because usually they would have been asking, well, should we keep Tease Tabor another year now? Should we keep whoever the second-round pick was that failed before and the second-round that failed? You know, these guys that are second-round picks that you don't want back. You know, those are wasted picks. Those are guys that, you know, you paid. That's about all you can say for it. So I expect more out of this new regime, hopefully, than they did the last one. But I want to start with this. Can we both agree, all three of us agree, that Lawrence and Wilson are the first two picks? That pretty much set in stone?
I mean, as far as we know, would it be a total stunner if Zach Wilson was not the second pick? I think it would be a total – I mean, I think it would be very surprising, but you know, I mean, this is the surprises have happened in the past. I guess to answer your question, yes, it would be a surprise, but, you know, it's the NFL draft and sometimes things happen.
Right. But for right now, for purposes, Mike, you think that's that's pretty good, Mike?
I think it's 99.999% certain that those are the first two.
All right, pick number three. And I've talked to Scott about this on Twitter before, a message we sent. Pick number three is San Francisco. They traded up for somebody. A lot of people say they would have took whatever quarterbacks there, but I think you trade up like that, you know who you want. So, Scott, are you thinking they notice Mac Jones now unless Mac Jones does something totally crazy in the next 2 weeks?
I don't know. I mean, I would love to feel certainty about that. I agree with you totally that there. I don't think a team gives up everything that they gave up to go to three just to say, whoever spills there and, you know, doesn't go pick one or pick two, we're comfortable with. I'm not sure that's how smart people do business, smart NFL people. I think there could be a couple players that they like there, but I think that if you read the tea leaves a little bit, they talk to the Jets for a couple weeks, and I think it's clear that the 49ers know who the Jets are taking. So, you know, we're assuming that it's Lawrence and Zach Wilson off the board. So then you're looking at Trey Lance. You're looking at Justin Fields. You're looking at Mac Jones. You know, it's tough. That's a tough scenario because, do you give up all that capital? I want to hear Mike's opinion on this too, but I'm not sure you're giving up all that capital for a player like Mac Jones. But I can see, you know, in Kyle Shanahan's offense, how he can be very effective and maybe an upgrade over Jimmy Garoppolo down the line. You know, I think that's reasonable to think, but that's a lot to give up for a player like Mac Jones.
I think that Kyle Shanahan is looking at a win now proposition, a lot like the Rams are on a little older roster than the 49ers have. And I think that he's wants to put a quarterback in that position for this year and next year and the year after, to contend, you know, for a conference championship and the Super Bowl all 3 years. And I think, I'm not saying this is exactly what I would do. I mean, I like the theory and all that. I just don't necessarily like the selection of the player. And I think Mac Jones fits his model for right now. I don't think he's looking at a 12-year development project and a farewell speech and, you know, in the midfield in 2034 or whatever year it would be. I think he's looking at 2021, 22, and 23 because they have a really good chance. They've got a good football team when healthy. It looks healthy now. Got a lot of starters returning and high-level starters, and that's what I think he sees in Mac Jones. And we'll see if he's right.
Do you think he has the final call? Or does the GM have the final call, Mike?
I think it's Kyle Shanahan in this case. Yeah,
because
he and Lynch came in relatively together, and they're kind of tied at the hip. They see, you know, they're brought in as a team, much like what we have here in Detroit and Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes.
Right.
And,
but if it fails, who's going to get the blame? It's not going to be Shanahan gets the blame. It's going to be Lynch.
But they're not doing it for it to fail. They're doing it for it to work. We're looking at it that way. They're not. That's not the way.
I think Mike, you're onto something. If they view Mac Jones as a player who gives them a reasonable ceiling very quickly as a player, and they think it's a 3-4 year type of thing that where they have their winning window and they're going to pay him on a rookie deal to get them, you know, the winning games. I think that makes a ton of sense if they view the other players as needing time. So if they view, you know, Trey Lance as needing time before he can play at a reasonable level for them, if they view Fields the same way, then I understand the Mac Jones stuff. I just think that maybe you didn't need to go to three to do it, but then that's sort of like, that's like pick in if it works for them, it's like picking apart on, it's like nitpicking it. You know what I mean? Like if it works, then good on them. Yeah. Congratulations. You made a great move.
And you're getting a starting quarterback for the next 4 years at something like $9 million a year, 36 mil or 38 or whatever, you know, whatever the rookie pool number is. And that's Zach Johnson for 1 year. That's Zach for 1 year in Dallas.
Right. Okay. So it's a quarterback. We all know it's a quarterback. So we can say first three picks, first three quarterbacks. So it'll be three quarterbacks gone. Let's get quick. Cause I want to get to the Lions thing. We got Atlanta. Now this is the linchpin of the draft to me. If they're taking a quarterback, that takes quarterback number four off the board. If they don't and take one of the skill position players or linemen, then that takes one of the – I got the – to me, I got a list of five guys, Fields, Pitts, Chase, Sewell, and Lance. One of those guys will be there when the Lions pick. That's assured. So that's what I'm looking at here. So, Mike, I think we talked about it last week where you thought that Atlanta was going. But, Scott, do you think Atlanta's going more toward a position player or a quarterback?
I think it's very dependent on what they think of Matt Ryan. I know that they're tied, you know, with the restructure of him, you know, for a little while, but it's tough. You know, I mean, I could see how they need to be moving on at some point from him, but there's so much money tied into him as a player right now that I would think that maybe going with a skill position type like a Kyle Pitts or a Ja'Marr Chase, somebody like that. I mean, it feels like it's overkill with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and Hayden Hurst and Russell Gage and some of the other players that they have. But you know, it really maxes out the summer of you know, Matt Ryan's career. It's just, to me, it's not necessarily about Atlanta maybe taking quarterback. It's about Atlanta trading out for a team coming up for a quarterback. That I think that's there's a potential there.
And Mike, you still holding for
me? I think if you want development, it's Trey Lance. I think if you want somebody who might be able to come in who's played, you know, major competition in college, then it's Justin Fields out of Ohio State. And there's really, I think Atlanta's in a good spot. I think whatever they do, they're going to be happy with, whether it's one of those two quarterbacks, whether it's Pitts or Chase, or whether it's trading. I think they're in a good position. But there's no guarantee on the decision working. But I think they're in a good spot, just like I think the Detroit Lions are three picks later.
Right. I always say when I look at a new GM, though, look quarterback. I don't know if it's going to happen, but new GMs always want to make their mark. And that's why I never rule out quarterbacks. But we'll move past that. Cincinnati, you know, it's Sewell or Lance. I think we all can agree to that. It's one of the two, whichever way they want to go.
100%.
It's got to be, to me, it's Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase.
I'm sorry, Chase. That's what I meant, Chase. Chase. Yeah,
I was going to say, because the wide receiver between Burrow and Chase,
right.
Man.
It's either Sewell or Chase, one of the two.
Yeah.
Look, I've had Sewell twice and Chase once. It's Sewell. In my heart, I think it's Sewell.
Okay.
So, I think you would think that them bypassing on a player like Penei Sewell is almost, well, I guess there's two ways to look at it, but it almost feels like it's dereliction of duty kind of thing. Like, you drafted Joe Burrow, almost killed him, and now you're ignoring helping. So the problem is they have Jonah Williams playing left tackle. They drafted him 2 years ago. If you're taking Penei Sewell, you're either moving Jonah Williams or you're playing Penei Sewell at right tackle, which I would be totally fine with. But there is something to think about with that connection between Burrow and Chase and how electric those guys were 2 years ago. When things broke down, and it didn't happen a lot, but when it broke down for Burrow and he would leave the pocket, he constantly found Ja'Marr Chase down the field. Those guys have chemistry, and it's obvious to see it on film. And it makes me wonder if they're going to get lured in by the kind of the sexy nature of that kind of pick. But I tell you that I think that if they did that and went with a player like Alex Leatherwood, you know, in round two, or maybe even move. I mean, I know it's super risky. It would be such a big gamble to do something like that. But I could see a team like Cincinnati falling for that, where I think the smartest thing to do is just to settle on Penei Sewell, draft a wide receiver if you really want to in round two. But, I mean, it's something that requires a little consideration. They may not do that. They may fall for Ja'Marr Chase.
Well,
I wouldn't do it if I had Burrow. No. I mean, if Burrow was a Detroit Lion and the Lions' offensive line looked like the Bengals' offensive line, I would be running to the podium for Penei Sewell. Exactly. Running.
Yeah, the Burrow Chase connection could be in the emergency room, because I'm telling you right now, you got to keep that guy upright. And a 20-year-old tackle, this guy can play 15 years for you. I mean, he's 20 years old.
We can talk a long time about Penei Sewell. It is incredible that his story is crazy. He was a 17-year-old starter as a freshman for Oregon. We saw him in 2019. Game one was against Auburn, and they had a really good defensive line. Marlon Davidson went in the second round. Derrick Brown was the seventh overall pick. You know, they had players, and he shut down Marlon Davidson. Now, it didn't look pretty all the time, but we're talking about a kid who's 18 years old at the time.
Yeah,
he is 20 currently. He will be 25 years old when he gets to his second contract. He is, you know, like I said, if it were me, I'd be running to the
podium. That's a no-brainer pick. And maybe we shouldn't take Atlanta out of that either. We scooped over, but He's a guy Atlanta might take too, Mike.
Well, and you know, that's possible. But from this standpoint, we're talking about two or three guys who are going to be gone. So from the Detroit Lions standpoint, sitting at seven, look, let the guys in front of you beat their brains
sure.
out. You don't care. As long as one of your guys is there
right.
when you get to seven.
So we'll put in Miami.
I'm sorry, just one way you hope it's somebody takes a fourth quarterback, but if they don't, there are still other good players on the board.
Right. So assuming where we go that they take Sewell, Miami's going to take Chase. If they don't, Chase. I don't know why I keep getting those two confused. But anyway, Miami's taking Chase. I don't think they're taking Pitts. But then I could be wrong, too. I could be wrong, too, but I think they'll take Chase. Don't ask me why I picked him. I don't know. What do you think on that, Scott?
I mean, I think it's logical. They need to give Tua weapons. You know, they have picks. They have another pick in round one. They have multiple picks next year. The Pitts thing is interesting because they have a player who's
they
not like
Gillette,
Pitts.
They got Gisecki, right? Gisecki's there.
Yeah, and he's not your inline, you know, your prototype big tight end who you attach to the line of scrimmage. He's more a move player, too.
Right.
So Pitts is, while I think no matter where he goes, he can be productive if you know, used right, meaning play him out of the slot, play him on the boundary. We can get into it with the Lions and how I think he could really change things for the Lions offense.
We're not getting into that today.
Oh.
No Pitts Lion talking here today. I don't want to get Michael Harris' head exploding again.
Oh, no.
Mike.
No,
wake up, Mike.
That. But
I'll put the pieces back together after this conversation.
Oh, jeez. Did the puzzle just come apart?
It came apart. Hey, but let's do it like this. Let's do it like this then. Just say they take a receiver. So you have Lance Pitts or Lance Chase for the Lions. Those are your two choices. And Fields. You got Fields there. We haven't talked about Fields. So say those three are there when the Lions.
What about Jalen Waddle?
Well, Waddle and Devontae, yeah, those are there too. So
okay.
I knew you would add those two. Anyway, of all those picks there, Mike, I'm going to get Mike first. I like to see Mike's head explode. Who are you taking, Mike?
At this scenario right now, who am I taking? I'm taking Micah Parsons. I'm back to Micah Parsons for a third time.
He was
three out of four. No, I'm dead serious. Now, of those four, which one would I take?
Micah Parsons.
Is it Chase versus Fields or Pitts?
Well, Chase, you got Lance.
I'm not taking Lance.
You got Lance and either Chase or Pitts. One of the two will be there. And Fields. And Fields.
I'm taking Chase.
Okay.
I'm taking a receiver who's built to play receiver.
Okay. And, Scott, where do you go from there?
Yeah, if we're talking that it's between Jamar Chase.
Well, you
and
can
Jalen
take
Waddle.
Your other two, the Waddle and the Devontae Smith. You can put those in, too.
I'm giving Waddle.
Can I take Micah Parsons then?
Yeah, you can. I told you you could take
you
Micah Parsons.
Set of rules for
I told you you could take Micah Parsons. I said you could have it.
That's not fair.
I said you could have it.
This is discrimination of the worst kind.
I said you could look.
Anti-linebacker.
Anti-Pitt State.
Why do you hate linebackers, Ken?
Because I feel linebackers, you get the second and third round. I tell you what, the guy from Tulsa is just as good a player to me.
No,
he is.
He's just
yes,
as good a player. He's just as good a
different.
Player.
He's different. He's different. Let's put it that way. He's different.
They're
different
40.
Players.
Yeah.
Okay, so who do you
I am not a Parsons guy. I'll be totally honest. I don't know that there's value in taking a player like Parsons at pick seven because – So Parsons is an elite athlete. It is ridiculous the way he moves. But just to make the assumption that he's going to develop into a player, you know, who you can drop into coverage and is a three-down linebacker, it's making an assumption that I think we've seen players not be able to do. He needs to attack. He needs to come forward. He needs to run through gaps. He does it incredibly well. But there is a touch of Jared Davis in his game where you can see him get out of the wrong gap. You can see him overrun plays. It boils down to whether or not you value a middle linebacker who's not going to give you a ton in pass coverage. That's kind of where it is. And to me, I'm looking at a player like Zaven Collins, like Ken, like you just mentioned, where I think he gives you a little more in some ways. Now, he's nowhere near as physical as Parsons. He's nowhere near as physical as Parsons. So, I mean, we gotta give Parsons credit for you know, what he is as a player. There's some off the field with Parsons that's not great.
Right.
So that's something that needs to be.
He's off my board. He's off my board because of that. I like the player, but that the off the field stuff, and I'm not going to put his business out in the street. You guys can Google it. He's off my board just because of that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I don't think putting his business out there is smart business for anybody.
Right.
But it's there.
It's there for you to read, and it's there for you to read, and then you make your own choices with him. But of all the players, now we got, who would you take? Would you take the quarterback, the receiver? Who's your guy, Scott?
Well, we talked a little bit earlier about the molds for Brad Holmes. And to me, you know, I mean, I don't think you can make a mistake taking Ja'Marr Chase at any point. He's, like Mike said, he is built to play receiver. He's very physical. If anything, his physicality sort of hides some of his speed. So what I mean by that is, when you watch film of him, there are times when it looks like this isn't the fastest guy, right? I mean, he's fast enough. He plays in the SEC. There are moments when he runs away from SEC defenders, but there are also times when he wants to mix it up, and he wants to get physical. He wants to play a physical brand of football, and that kind of hides what he is speed-wise. Now, is he ran 4.38 at his pro day, and I do not believe that he would run 4.38 in Indy. He's more of a 4.5 runner, but that's not an issue. There is no issues with his speed at all. He's a, you know, he's a phenomenal college prospect. Jalen Waddle, to me, fits more of the mold of receiver that Brad Holmes has drafted. He's a touch smaller. He's 5'10", 180 pounds. But he is, if you know, we have Jared Goff now, and Jared Goff needs to trust his receivers to be open before he will throw the ball to them. In Waddle's route running and quickness, he's going to uncover very quickly. So where Ja'Marr Chase wants to win with the ball in the air, Jalen Waddle's going to run into space, and he's going to be open quicker than where, you know, than what Chase will be open. So I would be looking at Jalen Waddle, but this is the beauty of what Mike said earlier, is that the Lions are going to be in a position where somebody's going to fall to them because of what's going in front of them, that you think, all right, this is a very good player, whether it's the position as wide receiver, or I know I don't want to mention Pitts because I don't want Mike to be mad at me, but he would do things here that I think would make the Lions offense relatively unlike anything else, because they already have your tight end attached to the line of scrimmage in TJ Hockenson. And it just, you know, there are things he could do, but I mean, you know, if you're giving Goff a weapon in round one and you really want Goff to work, I think that's a smart way to go about things. We have not talked about tackle. You know, I mean, if Penei Sewell's on the board at 7, don't you think the Lions should run that?
Well, we already talked about that. Penei Sewell's there. We're not even having any discussion.
What about Rashawn Slater?
Well, that's a discussion you can have. If you think Slater is worth a top 7 pick, or is he worth a trade back a couple of picks and taking a 7? But before you get to the Slater part, I just want to say this. I'm in favor if one of the quarterbacks is there, taking a quarterback and just be damned. Get a receiver in the second round, the third round. If a quarterback I got rated high, if Lance is rated higher than Fields or Field rated higher than Lance, I have no problem with him taking him. Because you're going to get value out of that even if you don't use him here. If Goff comes in and turns in a marvelous performance, you can always peddle him off next year. You can peddle that guy off. You can get your value back out of him. And he wouldn't have played, and you get your value back. But to me, this is a quarterback league. I'm sorry. Receivers now, they're coming out 6 a year now, because of just the way the game is played and how colleges are turning out receivers. So the difference between the best receiver and a good receiver and the best quarterback and a good quarterback, the difference in the quarterback to me is more. And you hope to not be this high again in the next few years.
Yeah, that's the thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, but just one thing. I don't think you draft a quarterback in the top 7 with the intent of moving him along for value later.
No, I didn't say you had to. I'm just saying if Goff turns in a miraculous performance. But I don't think he is. I'm just saying I don't think he is. But if in case he does and you think he's the guy, then you still get your value. But I'm just saying that's the back end of drafting a quarterback, that you still have a chance if the other guy is great that you can still get rid of him. But I think the quarterback you draft is going to be the quarterback you're going to go with. I think Lance or Fields is going to be a 10-year guy.
So I would think that if the Lions draft a quarterback at 7 and don't trade up, that they love that player. I mean, does that make sense, Mike? Like, they wouldn't.
Yes.
You're not. You don't have Goff for 2 years to draft a quarterback in this draft unless you just cannot pass that guy up. I don't see that happening. As much as, you know, we want them to figure out the position and sort of reset the franchise, they did that with Goff. They're going to give him every chance to fail. The nice thing about what they did in the Stafford trade is that they have opportunities. I mean, they hit the quarterback market with Goff. They have 2 picks next year. You can move around and go find your quarterback next year if Goff fails. They have two picks in the first round in 2023. Same thing. So the way I'm seeing it, and I could be wrong, is the way I'm seeing it is they would have to covet the quarterback who fell to them. And I don't know that that's happening. I guess is, you know, and I think that Ken, I think it makes sense what you're saying. You know, if you love a quarterback, take him. You don't have to give anything up. You know, you're not moving up a few picks to go get him. You know, and, you know, we're not going to be in, I mean, you hope they're not in a situation where they're picking in the top 3 or 4 next year. And you know what I mean? Then
right.
things went very badly.
Right.
But I think that you need to give Goff a chance. That's just what I think. And I think that wide receiver is the way to do that. But the Rashawn Slater stuff is interesting. The other way to do that is to keep him protected and make him feel comfortable. And the Slater's a really good tackle. He'll play right tackle for you for a long time. You know, solidified the right side of the offensive right. line, and right now that's not a solid thing.
No, but the only thing to your point and Mike's point too about Slater is, you got your left tackle signed and you got a good left tackle. So to me, the urgency of a right tackle in the first round, in the top 10 of a first round, is lesser to me because you can find a right tackle in the second round. You can find a right tackle in free. You can find a right tackle. You got your best side covered, so you're good. So that's why I'm saying I would take a chance on something else of equal value before I would do the tackle, even though Slater's a good player.
I think you're undervaluing. We've talked about this before. I think you're undervaluing the right tackle. I think the difference between left tackle and right tackle has changed dramatically in the last 6, 8, 10 years. The way they throw the ball, the way they play it with the 5 receiver formations, you need 2 good tackles now, not just 1.
Mike is right, and if you look at
– Wait a minute, let me repeat that. Let me get the tape recorder on. Say that again, Scott.
No,
Mike is right.
He crushed
it. Let me put this down. Okay, Mike, remember the time this happened.
He should just repeat what he just said. Nobody has to say anything. It's perfect. All the really good pass rushers, like the rare pass rushers at the NFL level, are coming over the right tackle. They just are. So Mike's right. The mentality that your blind side's protected and you can just throw whatever red meat's out there to play right tackle for you, that's not how the game is played anymore. You need a right tackle who can protect. And right now, looking at the Lions' offensive line, you have an elite center. Jonah Jackson looks like he could be an ascending player. Taylor Decker's a very good left tackle, but then on the right side of the offensive line, Is Vitae going to play right tackle? Is he going to play right guard? Can he function at either of those positions? I don't know. I know that if you're Jared Goff and you're much more comfortable, the way he plays, he's much more comfortable not being pressured. You do need to solidify the right side of that offensive line. Now, yeah, can you find right tackles in round two? Yeah. But you're not finding a player like Rashawn Slater in round 2. You're just not.
Mm-hmm. All right.
In fact, I would tell you it's a luxury to have him playing right tackle for you, but it would take the Lions offensive line from being what I would consider, you know, a good offensive line to a fairly elite offensive line as long as Slater pans out. And that may do more for Goff than anything to keep him comfortable.
Right.
And I think that that's something that the Lions are invested in, is making Goff work.
All right. We're going to go a couple extra minutes today. We're at 30, but I want to go a couple. I got a question for both of you guys before we get to that, and this is about the tackle thing. Mike, what is the tackle, the guy that from Iowa that changed from defensive tackle to offensive tackle?
Oh, Matt Nelson?
Yeah. Do you see a future with him? Because he was an intriguing prospect to me, and I'm just wondering when we talk about right tackles, is he a potential starter, or is he just going to be a backup in your mind?
Well, I think he's a potential starter, but I think it's a project, and I don't think his future's in 2021 or 2022.
Okay, that's what
probably.
I wanted to know. So it's not in any of the next 2 years.
I don't think he's a walk-in starter in 2021. No.
Okay.
I like what he presents, but I think there's more to go.
Okay. Now,
yeah, and maybe down the road for him, he's a swing tackle, a guy who helps you, you know, on your 46-man, you know, game day roster kind of thing, but I don't think he's a player that you're avoiding. He's not a player you're looking at and thinking, yeah, in 2 years he's going to start for us, so we don't need to worry about that position. You know, he's not that guy.
All right. Well, the last thing we're going to talk about today, we've gone a long time. This is a very special podcast for you people out there. I know you're right in tent with this because – you don't get Scott off and you don't get Mike off.
Okay.
Well, you just been called right, Mike. So I was passed out. You fell asleep. We get to pick 7.
Yes.
Which way do you go? A trade down, and how far would you trade down or just take the 7th best player on your board? I'm going to ask each of you that question. That's your 2 choices. The only 2 choices you have. You can trade down, and you got to give me how far you will go. Or would you just stick with the 7th best player on your board? Scott, I'll start with you.
Can I ask a question before
I answer it? Sure.
What are you getting?
Well, just say you're getting fair value. Just say you're getting well, it depends on how far you go down. If you're going down to 19, like to the Redskins, you're getting the number 1 next year. I'm just saying, just for sake of this argument, the conversation means nothing. Just say you're getting fair conversation to move down. How far would you go down? We're talking just player now. How far back would you go to pick a player in the first round?
It'd be great for them to fall back just far enough to where they could take a defensive player who gives them appropriate value. So who that defensive player is, possibly Kwity Paye from Michigan. A defensive end, a pass rusher type who can really help you, maybe not in 2021, but in the future. They do have time to develop these guys. That's the one problem with pick 7 is that if we're I know Mike likes Parsons and he's obviously a defensive player, but if for some reason the Lions don't, there really isn't a defensive player worthy of that pick number 7. There just isn't. So moving back to say 15 puts them in a position where they could take one of the better defensive players in the class, and you'd be getting a future first round pick to make that kind of a move. I'd be all over that. I think that makes a ton of sense. And then it opens up the doors for the possibility of taking a defensive player. And the Lions have needs there. You know, it's not just a few needs. They need pass rusher. They need some interior help for down the road. They need multiple linebackers. They need a safety. They need, they have a young cornerback group, but you know, there are holes. So the intriguing part of a trade back is being able to address the defensive side of the ball and not necessarily being stuck into taking an offensive player. But then that kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier, is all these fifth-year options and first-round picks. You'd have 3 first-round picks next year. It's a great scenario if you're looking to move some of them to make some things happen. Holmes has done that in the past. He moved 2 first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey. The Rams have not had a first-round pick in a little while. He's been aggressive with those picks. So if you're saying he's going to be super aggressive with those picks to go get players he covets, then I like the idea of having more of those.
All right. Michael?
Well, first of all, Kenny, I was hoping you'd say at 7, would you trade up? I was going to say, no, you can't. You're at 7.
Where are you going to go?
Yeah, where are you going to go?
But anyway, you disappointed me, but I'm glad you didn't do it. I wouldn't go past 12, I don't think. And the only reason, the only way I'd go past 12 is if I got another offer to move back again, and you could really pile up some draft picks for the future. But I think 12 is about as far as I would go, because you're starting to – look, you're already getting out of the blue chips, even sitting at 7 probably. There's probably 1 or 2 more players there who qualify as a blue chip prospect. But 12, I think, would be my absolute limit. And I think you'd still be in a good position. You'd still get a good player, but there might be 1 or 2 there that – I guess it would be depending on who I'd be leaving on the board.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a guy I liked and really liked that I wouldn't trade. I really wouldn't. I'd take the player, because that's what the draft is about, is getting players.
Right. Now, this is what I would do. I will go back to 19, but you got to get me your 2nd and next year's 1 at least. And you might have to throw something else in so I could get to 19. And if I have to put a 2nd in to move back up, I would do it. I know that's a long way to say I would go to 19, but I would only go to 19 if I got enough ammunition to move back up this year, and that's not counting the number 1 pick you're giving me next year. So if I can get 3 number 1s next year and I got 2 ones, I mean, I got a 1 at 19, 2 twos, 2 threes, and you might have to give me another, so 3 threes, then I can move around 19 back to 11 or 12 or 13 if I needed to. So that's the only way I would go back to 19. The Washington deal, you'd have to give me a 2 and a 3 and a 1 for next year. So that's it. Other than that, I'm with the rest of you guys. I wouldn't go back. Maybe to Denver to 9 if they wanted to come get a quarterback. 10, Dallas if they wanted to get Pitts if he was there. Something like that. That's about as far as I would go. I wouldn't go back to 15 to New England. So that's.
Well, you make a compelling argument for going back to 19 and then coming back up with, you know, if you wanted to get up to, you know, 13, 14, 15 range for a defensive player kind of thing. It's always easier to do that in these kind of settings than it is for them to do something like that during the draft and to go back to 19 with the intent purpose to come back up is tough. That's a tough thing. I'm not sure that. I mean, I think that would be, they'd have to get very fortunate for that kind of a thing to happen.
Sure.
I don't know if Mike agrees, but.
But that's hard to do on draft day, too. It really is.
It really is.
You do that at the end of March or beginning of April. But
it sounds like that's something out of a movie.
Right.
Like, did you watch a movie and see it?
Yeah, I was watching draft day last night, matter of fact.
There you go.
But the thing about it is, if you're walking out of that draft with 3 first-round picks next year and you still got a first-round pick this year, no matter what number it was, you're in pretty good shape. You're in pretty good shape for the future.
Yes.
So that's where I would be. Use this pick like it's the last gift Patricia gave you, because you can do a lot of things with this pick. That's what my real beef with Quinn was. He just wasn't creative enough, Mike. I mean, that third pick last year, I'm not going to relive it. I'm not going to say, and you both know. I just felt that he was just too stagnant with that, man. You got to be a riverboat gambler. You got to lie and cheat and do whatever you can to have people believe things. You knew in February he was taking Okuda. I mean, it's just – it never changed.
Yeah but they were – who else – who traded, though, in the top half of the first round? Nobody.
And they were in job-saving mode.
Yeah.
Well, that's the part,
too,
right?
Picks changed hands.
Yeah. No, I agree with you,
picks changed hands, and they were with each other.
But this is the thing –
no, there were no trades.
But this is the thing I always said, and I said it, and I'll say it again. I would have took one of the quarterbacks – and then traded him if somebody gave me a better deal. But at worst, I'm walking out with a quarterback in the top 3. And I said that before. I know everybody loves Stafford, who came off a back injury and missed 8 games. So it wasn't like the pick you might not have used him if it was a quarterback. That was my only thing from last year. I thought the value at 3 was a quarterback, not a cornerback.
So if they would have taken a quarterback last year, what is the tone of this franchise look like? How different does it look?
They probably would have not – The record probably wouldn't have changed, but
yeah, just assume that it's pick 7 right now.
Right, going into this draft now, your quarterback's taken care of. You can the Patrick Surtain and all these guys now come into play, where you can move back a little and get your corner. You can trade it up and down. A quarterback falls, you move off totally. You just in a better position right now. And if it was Herbert, you in a damn better position right now.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that Herbert was in the equation at 3, and it's.
Well, this is the part about that, Scott, which I don't understand. Herbert was great last year. Can we all agree to that?
Yeah.
They coached him at the Senior Bowl. Did they look at him? I mean, where you had him right there on your field. How do you not see that? And he played good Senior Bowl week.
He did. He did. I was there. He looked every bit part of, you know.
I'm telling you, Scott, they weren't even looking at him. They had already decided. That's my point I'm trying to make. You were a Senior Bowl. Mike, you saw the game. How do you not have a guy right there that size, the way he played, and not even entertain taking him?
Because he wasn't going to help them.
Exactly. He wasn't going
to
help them.
And they needed to save themselves by having a miraculous season, and they thought Okuda might help them.
Exactly. Which
So in the scenario where you have a quarterback now, you don't have Okuda, which means at pick 7 you're taking – Patrick Surtain,
right,
and you're probably
back,
pretty happy doing that.
Yep, you'll move back for that. Yeah. All right, well, we got to go. I know we're 40 minutes in.
Could we stay at least in this decade, okay? Can we do that?
Where are we out of the decade, Mike?
Well, we're not, but I'm just being
sort of. Where are we out of the decade?
We're redrafting.
Well, look, Mike, every mistake compounds to another year. All right, so now you have a reset. But now you have a reset. This is your reset.
Yeah.
You got new GM, new coach. But you still have to pay for the sins of the past. So we're just saying where you go from here and what could have been. That's all. But we are focused on where you're going from here. But don't make the mistake again that if you love a quarterback, just because you don't need them, you pass them. That's the lesson from last year.
It is.
Well, but you're assuming the Lions loved Herbert.
No, I'm just saying if they do. Well, I'm just saying, regardless if they love them or not, I forget it. I'm not getting into that. All right, we'll let it go. Because I could be here an hour talking about why they should have looked at these two guys. But anyway. All right. Well, that's it. Scott, thanks for joining us this week.
Anytime. It was a pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah, maybe we'll get you back for the draft because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to end up choking Mike one of these weeks. It's just going to be.
Are you guys in the same room?
I'm just choking.
That's why we do this on the phone.
I'm going to reach
through the
phone. There you go. I'm telling you right now, the only reason Mike is still around is because of COVID, because we used to do this in person. And right now, Mike, we'd be choking it out right now. But
Absolutely.
All right, Scott Bishop.
I'm glad you guys are on Zoom or whatever you're doing.
That's
this
right.
Good.
All right, that's Scott Bishop, staff writer for The Football Guy. Check him out with Sean Belizean and the Woodward Sports thing. Thanks a lot, Scott. And Michael Hare.
Thank you guys for having me. You guys have a great day.
All right, Michael Hare. He'll be doing his mock drafts. Check it out on DetroitLions.com. And he'll be having a big thing coming up with the media draft he always does, which is a great thing. Check out DetroitLions.com. Check out the video of the coach at the Ford plant. It's very, very nice. Very nice videos
really
you guys
good.
Put up.
It really is.
So check it out.
It's a nice thing.
All right, Mike, next week it'll be 1 week before the draft, so we're going to get down to it, all right?
Down and dirty.
Down and dirty. Thank you very much. That's Michael Hare, Ken Brown, Scott Bischoff. We're out.